Welcome to Explore Riverside Weekly, the show that explores all the things that makes the City of Arts and Innovation a great place to live, work, and play. I'm Greg Lee, and today's guest is Riverside Ward 5 City Councilmember Chris MacArthur. Council MacArthur was sworn into office to represent the ward on December 11th, 2007. He actually comes from one of Riverside's citrus farming families and is a product of our own public school system. After graduating from Riverside Poly High School, Chris went on to earn his bachelor's degree in political science from the University of Southern California. I knew you'd appreciate that. Yeah. All right.
And we always like to hear that.
Okay, Dan, I think we got it now. Chris returned home to Riverside after college and took over many of the responsibilities of the family citrus farm, during which time he met his wife, is it Jocelyn?
Jolynn.
The couple is currently raising the third generation of Riverside MacArthur's, their two sons. In addition to his duties as a city council member, Chris MacArthur is also a regional vice president for Prime America Financial Services. Chris MacArthur is actively involved in Riverside's community as a mentor of the Rotary Club of Magnolia Center, Toastmasters International, and the California Baptist University Board of Visitors. Welcome to Explore Riverside Weekly, Councilman MacArthur.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's certainly my pleasure to be here.
I thought we were going to surprise you with that rendition of the fight song.
But, well, I always like to hear it.
I know you do. It gets you riled up there. So a few weeks ago, you and I had the opportunity to tour he is the Dean of Film at Gloucester University, who's actually considering doing an IMAX film about Riverside. What I found fascinating was our conversation, and you were explaining the citrus industry and your background in that. Can you tell us about that?
Sure, family? Sure, be more than happy to. I just wanted to say that it obviously I'm humbled every day that I have the opportunity to represent the residents of Ward 5, but I certainly appreciate the opportunity to tell you a little bit about our family history, too, and a little bit about growing oranges and citrus in general. My father first came to Riverside in 1931. He was 16 years old. He was an orphan with no money. But when he came to Riverside from upstate New York, where it was about 40 below, and he comes to Riverside and sees the blossoms on the trees and the 80-degree weather in January, he just knew that this was the place he wanted to live. And so even today, he'll be 99 years old on September 10th. He knew this was the place. And so when he went on and became a dentist, but he always had that farming blood in his veins. So when he came back to Riverside and raised citrus for now 67 years, this was the ideal place. And the Greenbelt is probably the best place in the world to grow citrus.
And you are a strong proponent for the Greenbelt and making sure that we maintain really citrus is Riverside's history and maintaining that history.
Well, we're very fortunate because Riverside really is the best place in the world to grow citrus. We have warm days and cool nights, and with the magic of Matthew Gage bringing water from San Bernardino and Eliza Tibbetts, who brought the original naval orange, Washington Naval, to Riverside, it really started the second gold rush in California, and that's why Riverside was one of the richest per capita cities in the late 1880s and 19th century.
But you do warn people that if you really want to make money, citrus might not be the industry to jump into.
Well,
a citrus farmer.
It's obviously not as profitable as it once was, but I think because of the Gage Canal, we're able to keep water rates low, and it keeps at least viable citrus. And obviously not as profitable, but we're in a position where we still plant new trees in the spring. We harvest anywhere from November to March, but it's kind of a process that you have to go through of irrigation and pruning and taking care of pests, and that's what it is. And you know, it's kind of like farming. Farming is a matter of timing and luck sometimes. It's there's an old saying is your fortune may be somebody else's misfortune.
And a lot of patience.
And a lot of patience.
So what made you decide to move into politics?
Well, it's kind of funny because we used to sit around as kids at the dining room table in the morning. We always talked politics and sports. you know, we heard the USC, the fight on in the background, but, and I was raised in a sports family, you know, we talked, obviously USC football and basketball, but
you're a big Celtics fan, I heard.
Oh, sure. About as big as a Celtics fan as you are a Laker fan. So.
That's a good answer.
But we always used to sit down. My dad is a voracious reader, and he used to have the habit of sitting down every morning and reading the newspaper cover to cover. And I still do that every morning. Obviously, you go online for some articles, but I still like having the physical paper in front of me and flipping the pages. I always had an interest in politics. I graduated with a degree from USC in political science, and was very fortunate there to have some of the real leaders in politics in Southern California, and I had the opportunity to see that. But I really give credit to my wife, JoLynn, for getting me involved in local politics. And after my predecessor, Ed Akison, decided not to run, she really encouraged me to run. And after what Riverside has given back to our family, I thought it was time for our family to give back to the city we love. And obviously, once you get in, there's no looking back.
There really isn't. There really isn't. So tell us a little bit about your priorities for the ward. It's a very unique ward in the city, having the Green Belt. What are some of your priorities?
Well, when I was elected 6 years ago, we really had a 5-point plan, and that was fixing traffic now, protecting our neighborhoods and families, creating opportunities for our children, holding City Hall accountable, and improving our emergency services. And I think we've done a pretty good job of fixing traffic. I think we've really made great progress. We've seen 3 major bridges built in Riverside: La Sierra, Van Buren, and the Santa Ana River Bridge. We've obviously widened Van Buren, which creates tremendous easier traffic flow through Arlington Village into the Greenbelt area, synchronizing all of our traffic signals, and also 5 grade separations. We've got 2 that were completed, Harupa and Columbia. Now on the way is Streeter, Iowa, and Riverside. We've made significant progress on traffic, obviously a long ways to go. Protecting our neighborhoods and families. I think Riverside has the model program for eradicating graffiti in the country. Neighborhood stabilization and livability. I mean, taking care of abandoned homes and removing those individuals that might be, I guess you could say, the neighbor from hell. The finest police department, I think, in California. And also working with RUSD and RPD and helping these challenged youths with programs. Creating opportunities for our family. I think in 1907, when I came on board, we had some of the worst parks, not only in the region, but California. Now I think we have some of the best parks, from Arlington Heights to the Rank Center at Hunt Park. And holding City Hall accountable, not making sure that nobody lost their home through a process called eminent domain. And I think our emergency services are the envy of the state. Our Emergency Operations Center really puts Riverside in the front.
Now, I want you to go back to Arlington Sports Park, because that is a very unique park in a very unique area of the city. And you made it a priority that you had included elements in the park that reflected the citrus heritage of Riverside.
Well, it's a special area, and I think we only had one chance to get it right. And so what we did is we said, look, if we're going to build a park, we need to tell the story of the Arlington Heights area. And that's what we did. We have three rows of citrus trees around the perimeter. We have the buildings look like a working citrus ranch. We saved the standpipes, where the water actually came out of the standpipes to water the groves. We have an interpretive trail that meanders along like the Gage Canal, that talks about the story of Matthew Gage and the brilliance of him bringing water to Riverside, affordable water, in the Gage Canal. We talked about Eliza Tibbetts bringing the Naval Orange to Riverside. We talked about John North and how he originally founded the city. And so when parents and their children come to Riverside and they really say, well, why is Riverside so much different than other cities? They have the opportunity to read about our history, and that's what distinguishes us from other cities.
And kudos to you for really doing that, council member. And then how does the city manage to preserve the citrus heritage? During our tour, you showed plots of land where really citrus may not work there anymore, or somebody may not choose to invest citrus in there, but it's still large acres of land that are designated for farming. How do you manage that?
Well, in the 70s and 80s, our residents passed something called Measure R and C, and that was to protect our historic, at that time, citrus green belt. We set aside over 400 acres in the California State Citrus Park, but we still have quite a few groves that are there. But on the flip side, we also have quite a bit of land that is either abandoned or it's turned into nurseries or other uses. But we're particularly focused on the areas in the green belt that are now bare pieces of land or dying groves. And so what we're in the process of doing right now, Councilmember Gutierrez, who's our former planning director, and myself are rewriting an initiative to create incentives for families to come back to the green belt and replant an orchard type farming. It may not be just citrus. It might be avocados. It might be walnuts. In something in that low impact agricultural vein. But also we're looking to promote agriculture, and we're creating a working group to discuss the issues. What else can we take out of this huge jewel that's in the middle of our city and really promote agricultural economic development?
And you already have some of those other uses in there. I know you showed us an avocado farm. What other low-impact uses are there?
Well, we have a very successful truck farming operation, the Corona family, that's on the corner of Madison and Victoria. We're seeing other uses of people wanting to come in. Every place you read now, you'll talk about cities looking for ways to invest into community gardens, into other types of agriculture that might help to prosper. But Riverside's really the only city that I know of in California that actually has this asset in the middle of its city that can be used to not only promote agricultural excellence, but also community relationships throughout our community through agriculture.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about another sort of community work, and that's some of the things that you've done with RUSD, Ramona High School, and the track field out there. But right now, we got to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Ward 5 Councilmember Chris MacArthur.
If you had knowledge of your energy consumption data, would it help you cut down on your energy costs? Sure it would. And with the Kilowatt Easy Energy Usage Monitor, it's easy. Here's all you have to do. Go to the library. That's right. Go to any Riverside Public Library and borrow a Kilowatt Monitor. Take it home just like you would a library book. Plug the monitor into an outlet and your appliance into the monitor. You'll get real-time information on how much it will cost to operate. Knowing what these devices cost to operate will help you make better judgments when using them. So start saving energy. Go to the library, borrow a monitor and a book, test your appliances, turn off the TV, and read. It's fundamental, it's environmental, and it can save you money. For more information, call 951-826-5485. 951-826-5485. Riverside Public Utilities. Water. Energy. Life.
AM 590. The Answer.
Hello and welcome back to Explore Riverside Weekly. I'm Greg Lee, and we are talking with my guest, Ward 5 Councilmember Chris MacArthur. Chris, you've been credited with initiating the joint use agreement with Riverside Unified School District for the Ramona High School stadium and track fields that serve both Arlington and Ramona High Schools, as well as Pop Warner and Junior All-American football teams. Tell our audience how this agreement came to fruition.
Well, I think the Ramona Stadium is probably one of my proudest moments as a councilman. And what happened is I met with Councilmember, now Mayor Bailey, right after we were elected in December of 2007. And I really was embarrassed by some of the terrible facilities that we had in Riverside. My oldest son, Garrett, who's now 17 at the time, was only 11. Was playing Pop Warner football. And in those days, Pop Warner football, the practice fields were known as Gopher Gulch, and they used to practice at the old Arlington High School field, which was their practice field, which basically became a mud bowl in October. And so we would go to the surrounding communities, and our kids would play, and they would come to Arlington, the old Arlington field, and it was really embarrassing. And I made a commitment to Pop Warner and Junior All-American that when I ran, that Riverside would never be embarrassed again. And so Mayor Bailey and myself worked with members of the RUSD board from 2008 through 2010. And in September of 2010, we opened the Ramona high school stadium, and just to see the expression of those kids when they went on the field. And this is a joint effort with not only Ramona and Arlington and Pauley High Schools that play there, but also Junior All-American football and also Pop Warner. And we also had Councilmember Adams that used to play for Ramona, but way back when. And we presented him a jersey, and he ran out on the field himself. And see the expression on his face.
Did he do a 100-yard dash?
Well, he didn't do the 100-yard dash, but the expression made the struggle and the fight to get that done worth it.
Well, as a Ramona graduate, I'm appreciative of that as well. So what other accomplishments or projects are you proud of during your tenure as council member?
Well, we obviously talked a little bit about the Arlington Heights Sports Park, but we've also had, an opportunity to revitalize Arlington Village. We have five historic murals in the city. We have a wildly successful chili cook-off every Memorial Day weekend. But really, we've just scratched the surface. We've got some exciting projects coming to Arlington that's going to continue to revitalize the Arlington community. Every time I enjoy a soft serve ice cream cone at Dairy Queen at California Square, that again was worth the fight to keep the Dairy Queen in California Square. And also the Citrus Park. Former Mayor Loveridge and myself, when former Governor Schwarzenegger threatened to close the Citrus Park, we made several trips to Sacramento, and we were able to keep the park open, and hopefully the state will keep their hands off of it, and we intend to keep it that way. Arlington Library, obviously record crowds, not only to serve seniors and students. The first public gymnasium at Hunt Park, we refurbished our pool and our skateboard park, and really getting back to the basics, taking care of paving streets, fixing sidewalks, fixing curbs, addressing the daily issues that are facing all of our constituents.
Now, I'm going to ask you to go back to Arlington Village so you can give them a plug. For those folks that are listening and have not been to Arlington Village, or they may have but didn't know where they were, tell them where Arlington Village is.
Well, the Arlington Village is the original center of the citrus industry, and it was actually a separate city, the city of Arlington, before it was annexed into the city of Riverside. And it really, the heart of Arlington is the corner of Van Buren and Magnolia. And every May of every year, we have a chili cook-off that is sponsored by the Arlington Business Partnership, which is a business improvement group to promote business improvement district to improve businesses in Arlington. But if you go back, you see the rich history of Arlington, and what we're trying to do is take a jewel and just embellish it and polish it. Where in some years, it's maybe possibly over the past few years, it's been neglected, but we're working hard to make sure that people know where Arlington is today.
Now, I've emceed the event a couple of times, and I don't recall you winning the cook-off, the chili cook-off.
I did this year.
This year. Oh, that's right. This year you did win. I take that back. I stand
this year,
corrected.
Yes. As a matter of fact, it was on my phone for a few months that one of my sons put on there. So
that's looking at the past. Let's look forward. What projects are you looking forward to coming to fruition?
Well, I think the biggest project that I virtually live, breathe, sleep is the Quiet Zone. And for those listeners that may not be familiar with the Quiet Zone is basically the ability to have the train horns turned off, these incessant blaring of horns throughout the city. And in particular, this Quiet Zone is along the BNSF, the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad, from Buchanan to the west, just west of Cridge, and eventually it'll go through the city in Wards 1 and 2 when the construction of the 91 freeway, the widening, is finished. But the Quiet Zone will basically turn off the train horns. As Councilmember Adams would say, when the Quiet Zone is finished, the only place you'll be able to hear a train horn would be a museum. And that's the way that we want to do this. And this has been a huge bureaucratic process working with the railroad, state of California, the federal government. But we're down to the wire now. We've only got a couple of more steps in the Quiet Zone. So we should be finished mid to late 2014.
So there won't be a noise as the train crosses.
That is correct. They will not have to blow their train horns. We will be putting we've already built in the additional construction for safety, which has really helped. We have not had an incident along that line in the last couple of years now after we put in the construction. Additional safety regards like raised medians, what I consider braille pads. They call them elongated domes for the pedestrians. But what we're going to be doing is putting additional gating and new signals from the BNSF, which will enhance the safety. But once you put those in, then the engineers do not have to blow their horns. And so for those residents that live right next to the BNSF, it is going to be a huge relief to those folks.
Now, a couple weeks ago, I interviewed Councilman Jim Perry, who took the Ward 6 seat vacated by Nancy Hart. As a seasoned council member, what advice would you have for Councilman Perry and any future council members about the position?
Well, the only thing I would say, and I know Jim Perry, and Jim's a very proactive individual, but one of the things, I've been in the customer service field for 30 years, and what I've always told people, I will return your phone calls and return your emails as soon as possible, unless I'm in a meeting or I'm talking with another constituent. So as long as you're proactive and you return phone calls and you return emails, your council members know that they have an effective leader at City Hall for you. And I would just tell him, it's just, you need to be proactive. And as I said before, Jim is extremely proactive. I think he'll do a great job for his residents in Ward 6. And I'm very confident in Ward 3, we'll have a good representative from Ward 3 also that'll take care of the concerns of their constituents.
Now, another discussion I had with Councilman Davis, Paul Davis, on the show, we discussed weighing the good of the ward versus the overall good of the city. Sometimes those might clash. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that is a great question, because that comes up a lot. And I think it illustrates why the ward system is so important. I think it could be best illustrated by former Councilman Paul Renk, who served my area from 1983 to 1987. And in the 60s, we did not have a ward system. We have what was called an at-large, similar to what they have in Corona and also Moreno Valley. But at that point, Joe Renk, Paul Renk's father, who was the councilman at that time in Arlington, was building the original community center, which bears his name today, the Renk Center. And when he received his money to build the community center, the other councilman in town said, "All right, Joe, you got your money for your community center. Now don't ask us for any money, more money for Arlington." So I think that what that does is it tells you the importance of the ward system. And what it allows us to do is those areas that were underserved, like Arlington, Arlanza, La Sierra, most of the money stayed downtown. Now with the ward system, we have proper and equal representation in all of the wards. And really, as the council member, you're the mayor of that ward. You take care of the interest and of your residents. You're elected to represent their interest. And I think the ward system ensures, you know, we're all here for the betterment of the city, but it allows that council member to make sure that they get their fair share of downtown dollars and not just the table scrap. So I think that's why the ward system is so effective.
And it's also nice because you are familiar with the ward versus someone like Councilman Mike Garden, who's very familiar with Ward 1. He might not understand the needs of the Green Belt.
Absolutely.
Versus you may not understand the needs of the Hunter Park area that Councilman
right.
Gardner represents.
Well, I can assure you, any person that's been elected from a ward, if they're successful, they will have walked every street in that ward.
And knocked on every door there.
Absolutely.
Which is actually how you met the film director at La Sierra was.
That is correct.
By knocking doors. Tell that story, because I think that shows that.
What I did is I went back and rewalked the area that I inherited from Councilmember or Mayor Bailey when we went through realignment or the realignment of the districts. And so I went and walked the area that used to be part of Ward 3 that's now part of Ward 5. But I also went back to the Riverwalk Vista area of La Sierra, or of just east of La Sierra, which are new homes that are being built there. And I introduced myself to those individuals that lived in that particular area. They just recently bought a house. And I met Rodney Vance, who is the director of the film school at La Sierra University. And we got talking about his history about doing a IMAX film about Napa Valley, and I encouraged him to look at the possibility of doing an IMAX film of the Greenbelt and our rich citrus heritage, and obviously focusing on that. And he was really thrilled by the idea, and it looks like we're moving forward, making some progress to have that come to fruition.
Well, in economic development, we say it's all about conversations. And that's what really makes someone successful, is the conversations that they have with people. In fact, I remember Mayor Bailey said that was really his success to his campaign, was going and knocking on doors, talking with people and getting to know them. So as time runs out, is there anything else you'd like to add, anything you want to promote before we let you go today?
No, I would just say that it's been my pleasure in representing the residents of Ward 5, and I think Mayor Bailey is correct. My residents know me because I've sat in their living rooms. I've sat across their kitchen tables. I've met them at my barbecue, which we just had last Saturday. We had almost 500 people there. So they know their councilman. And those of us that are elected individuals, you need to make sure that you know your constituents. And if you don't, you're not doing them the service that they elected you to do.
Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Explore Riverside Weekly. I want to thank Ward 5 Councilman Chris MacArthur for joining us on today's show. I'm going to invite him to join me to watch any Boston Celtics game he would like. Make sure you tune in to Explore Riverside Weekly every Saturday afternoon at 2:30 p.m. brought to you by the City of Riverside. You can also visit us on the web at exploreriverside.com, and you can download the podcast on iTunes. Just head on over to iTunes and search for Explore Riverside Weekly.